Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, James Bonding listeners. In case you haven't heard, we have James Bonding t-shirts and posters for sale, signed, as a matter of fact, over on podswag.com.
Oh, that's right, Matt. And we have a brand new t-shirt. Everyone wanted it, and now you can get it. It's the Knick Knack Tabasco t-shirt. It's available right now.
Give your dog a bone. Podswag is your one-stop shopping for clothing, accessories, and novelty items from all of your favorite podcasts.
But specifically this podcast. You can get the new shirt and more now at podswag.com/bond.
That's podswag.com/bond.
Tell him Matt Gourley sent you.
Right.
James Bonding Podcast.
Hey, you movers and shakers, are you sick of the same old athletic clothing?
Oh, am I ever, Matt. That's why these people who are like me need to try Vuori.
They bring a fresh perspective to performance apparel.
The design is modern and doesn't look or feel like your old gymnasium clothings.
That's right. I got sent some in the mail, and it's sleek and athletic, and it's also comfortable. It fits really well.
You know, man, these are perfect for more than just going to the gym. I'm talking about running, hiking, training, pretty much everything you can think of, even after you return from the dead and have to go back to work at MI6.
What if you're in a pararaptor or whatever those things are and the world is not enough?
Yeah, are you talking about one of those things that are from the Russian Nuclear Atomic Energy Division?
Yeah, well, or what about a water bike?
Oh, if I'm on a water bike, rather than wearing a full-dress naval uniform, I am 100% of the time going to pick out some Vuori athletic clothing.
Well, then you're in luck, because if you go to Vuori now, they're offering a special deal to all of our listeners.
Wow. Would that special deal be something like getting 25% off your first purchase when you head to vuoriclothing.com? And that is spelled V-U-O-R-I. clothing.com. That's Vuori Clothing, V-U-O-R-I clothing.com, and use the code Bonding at checkout, Matt, for 25% off.
Isn't Vuori sound like a good Bond villain name?
Oh, yes. My name is Melania Vuori.
Melania Vuori of Vuori Enterprises. Welcome, Mr.
Bond. Vuori Bond. What?
Go to vuoriclothing.com and use promo code Bonding.
Matt Bonding Podcast with Matthews, Myra, and Gourley.
Well, this Matthews is a special Gourley edition of James Bonding, because in studio... our man in the East, Phil Nobile Jr., takes over the show, and we become the guests.
What?
Is that not the craziest thing you've ever heard, everybody?
I mean, are you falling down after hearing this?
This is, you know, before we get into this podcast, I just want to mention that I noticed that when Roger Moore says, make a choice... the music
bastard.
To Live and Let Die score happens to play at that exact
bastard.
Moment. It's really interesting.
That's
I hope
an amazing thing.
We should talk about that
now,
later. You know, it'd be a real dickish move of Gourley to like pretend he discovered it. But whatever.
He would never.
Here we are.
Good Lord. All I remember is something about eyebrows, baloney, and
honky tonk. Something.
This is going to be hilarious in a week.
Just know that the past minute of dialogue that you've heard right now will only make sense next week, and it's not you that's not getting it.
Yeah.
But we've planted the seed, and we've taken care of it. Now, we're here today. Our man in the East, Phil Nobile Jr., is here on business. He's been gracious enough to stop in, do a couple of podcasts with us.
Yeah.
So we've already recorded Live and Let Die for next week.
Mm-hmm.
And today, crazy. we're gonna hand the reins over to you to talk Bond 25, whatever else you want.
Cool. All right, we're going to talk about a few things. First of all, I've never been in your studio before, and I, as a fan, I want to just point out that I have not been able to take my eyes off the leather door.
Oh, there
it is. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It is amazing, and I'm jealous, and it's beautiful.
Some things are worth spending a little extra, and that door is one.
Yeah.
Well, it also helps with soundproofing for a podcasting studio, so it's not entirely impractical.
It's open.
Do you know what doesn't?
Because nobody's
also
home.
Is the fact that we never draw the curtains, and I just always hear myself reverberating off the glass.
Mm.
It's not that bad.
No. I bet it doesn't pick up as much on the mic, but in my own ears,
oh, yeah.
I just hear myself.
No, if we do like fully produced podcasts in here that kind of need post-production and stuff, you close the curtains and take the banjo down, because the banjo resonates when people talk, too. Then it turns into a pretty decent little studio in here.
That's
and
the
shut
beauty
the leather
of a banjo.
Door. Yeah.
I like the HGTV angle this episode's taking so far. Let's step into the kitchen.
All right.
So, guys, it's been a while since we talked, and we haven't talked about Bond 25 in a little while.
Mm-hmm. Right, nor have we on the show a little bit with the latest update of Danny Boyle. We've gotten about that far. But
we did. We boiled it down.
We did.
Yep. It's coming to a boil.
There we go.
It is coming to a boil, and you are the guy we go to anyway for this information, but to have you here in person to kind of talk us through it, you might as well start from the beginning.
You come to me, and right or wrong, you report on whatever I tell you, which is appreciated. We've ended up in some tabloids as a result in England. That was fun.
That's right. We have. Wait. So as you'll hear next week, tabloids, Desmond Llewellyn's hands, and possibly the reissuing of Roger Moore's Live and Let Die book. We can maybe claim responsibility for it.
We've made our mark.
Which is why I just don't understand why Barbara Broccoli doesn't give us a call and just say, boys, swing on by.
I know. Would you not be terrified to have Barbara Broccoli sitting in this chair?
Not at all.
Really?
I would be delighted to have her.
She seems so intimidating to me.
She cannot
ruin my life in any way, shape, or form because I do not work in Bond movies.
Sure, that's fair.
And therefore, I wouldn't be afraid to talk to her. And also, I'm just like, I'm fascinated by her. I would like to know about her life growing up on the set of James Bond.
I have so much to talk about. She's also done some great work with the franchise herself.
Yeah.
It would be amazing to have her here.
She's quite possibly.
Open invitation, Babs.
Right.
Yep. And let's talk about Pierce when you come on over. I'd love that.
Let's. So, Bond 25, what we know so far, the Bond fandom, the guys that are reporting on every last little thing, they're a catty bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of catty bitches. The BAFTAs?
Yeah.
He showed up at the BAFTAs, and his face looked really swollen and smooth, and everybody was like, he's had some work done. And they were a little worried, and I got to admit, when I looked at it, I was like, he doesn't look great.
Oh, everybody takes a bad picture?
Yeah.
I take them all the time.
It was video. He was presenting an award, and he looked a little banged up, but he recently appeared at an event where he's auctioning off his Aston Martin for charity.
Right.
And he looked a lot better.
That's a bird of the West Indies.
I love
we have him come in for the podcast.
We should have a book about the birds of the West Indies.
He just probably went on a bender the night before.
He's 50.
All done it. Yeah.
You know, he looked good, though. And he looked good. And a lot of people ran a Nothing News article that he confirmed that his next film is Bond 25. Like, you'll recall he made zero films between Skyfall and Spectre. So it's not a real surprise that his next film is Bond 25.
Is that because you think he gets tired out that much? When did he make Lucky Logan? After Spectre, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
That was just last year.
He gets tired out that much that he does theater.
He does theater, which I would imagine you could tell me as an actor, but I would imagine it's maybe even a bigger drain on your energy.
Oh, boy. I'd say you're giving me a little much credit there.
Well, let's pretend it is. And after Skyfall, he earned a break.
Yeah.
And I get cranky when people take shots at him because I think out of all the Bond actors, no one has given as much of themselves to the role, excuse me, as he has.
Right,
he's
and for 50,
himself to hell.
I should look anywhere near that good when I'm 50. Any one of us should.
I do. That doesn't make any sense.
but he looks good at 50, as good at 50 as any Bond, if not better. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, Connery was 41 in Diamonds Are Forever, and he looks 10 years older than Connery.
I don't know.
That's true.
I think Pierce is a handsome 50.
Pierce aged into his role pretty nicely.
Yeah, he did.
You guys were talking about how he looked in, like, World Is Not Enough, but I thought he looked really good in Die Another Day.
I agree. Yeah. He looks great. Wait, Connery, 41 in Die Another Day. That's
Diamonds Are Forever.
Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
Isn't it? He's just so grizzled and old looking. 41.
He's just a dad. Like, that's but not so like a young weird. Dad. Like, he's like meet the daughter's boyfriend dad.
Yeah. Wow. It's something. But I think we love talking about Bond 25. We're talking about the next one. We're always talking about the next one because it can be anything. Mm-hmm. And it's so exciting. And it's not like there's no disappointment or like, oh, near misses. It's just, it's so pregnant with possibility. And I get excited just thinking about
Bond
25.
It's promise crammed. Yeah, it's not been locked down or no bad choices have been made.
There may be bad choices being made. We're reacting to bad choices as if they're exciting. Oh, they're going to throw away their script and just write a new one in a month and film that if Danny Boyle says it's good. And we're thinking that's awesome because the options are so amazing.
No. No one's thinking that's awesome.
No, we all are thinking every last one of us.
I don't think that's awesome.
I do.
I don't think that's awesome at all.
Oh, I'm ready for... I'm ready to see what Danny Boyle will bring.
The last thing you want, I think, is a script that is sped through.
I agree with that. And I don't want it to be...
I don't want something that they have to be writing.
I don't want the... Yeah, same. But... Like... Yeah, go ahead.
Please. Oh, well, here's a thought. When they take too long on a script, they're passing through all these toll booths at the studio and everybody's stamping it.
Yeah.
And that's how you got Spectre.
Right. I agree.
So there's an argument. I can make anything, you know, a good thing or a bad thing. But
I think if you've got Danny Boyle ushering a script through personally, people are going to defer to him more and let him do more of an auteur thing. And I think that benefits almost anything, and especially Bond, if you look at, well, Skyfall could arguably be called that. I think Quantum doesn't count because of the strike. Yeah, I'm curious.
Bond doesn't need an auteur.
I disagree.
Okay.
I actually do. I think there might be too many cooks in the kitchen these days. And I'm not talking about, like, if you put Daniel Craig and Barbara Broccoli in there, but Spectre had a lot of Sony. It wasn't all bad input, but it had a lot of input and a lot of writers. And it just seemed to be watered down at every turn or something.
Yeah, because an auteur was running the show, Sam Mendes.
It was an auteur who was depleted.
Yeah, I think he was really on board.
Of a guy who's excited to make something happen. Mm-hmm. If they're so excited about whatever his idea is that they're willing to just tap the brakes and see what happens. I mean, I'm excited by the idea that this has moved them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I hope it's just not hoop jumping to keep Daniel Craig happy. But I also think that if he's on board with it, that's probably a good sign. When he's gotten really invested, you got Skyfall and you got Casino Royale. That's interesting.
That's an interesting point, Phil, because it is something to the point of like Danny Boyle, I don't think, moves their needle enough to care so much that we have Danny Boyle. He has this idea. It's not great, but it's the only way we're going to get Danny Boyle. Mm-hmm. So it has to be an idea where they're like, okay, that actually is a very good idea. Yeah, all right,
so
you can
curious.
Do it.
I'm so curious.
Yeah, and as we talked about next week, we think that Boyle's idea must certainly mean abandoning everything we saw in Spectre. Ignoring.
That's what you think.
Not retconning.
Not me.
You think that Danny Boyle gives a crap about what happened in Spectre.
I think that Danny Boyle's like, I'm going to fix this franchise.
Here's my prediction. I'm going on record. That Danny Boyle has come to them with his screenwriter, John Hodge or something. I can't remember what his name is. And they have a concrete, solid idea. And that the only real requirement Ian and Barbara Broccoli are going to have is like, okay, but wrap up Spectre in the cold open. Or something. Like, deal with it.
That's such hopeful thinking on your part.
Well, maybe they're listening.
You know, I'm hoping that they just ignore
it. You want that abandon it completely as a nod to the old school.
Absolutely.
Do you think it will feature Blofeld?
No,
not at all.
No.
That may be why it's so attractive to them is that Danny Boyle came to them with an idea that means they wouldn't have to explain why Christoph Waltz isn't in it anymore, and Blofeld is, but I bet Blofeld is in the Purvis and Wade script. Will we ever see that script? That's another question.
It'll get recycled for Bond 27?
Ooh.
Possibly. I think that the franchise isn't overly concerned with that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. With the through line?
Loose ends.
But they are now. That's the thing. That's the different
thing. Yeah, no, I think that it's the industry as a whole right now that is operating that way because of the success of Marvel and that franchise that I think everyone had been, you know, up to. I think it was at its fever pitch, this whole let's have a franchise, when Spectre came out. You know, which was what they were trying to do with Ghostbusters. Which is what they were trying to do with the ideas you see floated of James Bond getting spin-off movies.
Yeah, the universe.
Yeah, they're looking for a shared universe. And I think that that's cooling down a bit.
Do you think the Phantom Thread was a shared universe with James Bond?
Yes.
That was his tailor?
I mean, similar posture.
Like his Dr. No tailor? That would be amazing.
Woodcock?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
Do you? So what we heard from a Reddit leaker, and who knows if any of it's true, it's just that there's evidence that what this person had was good info, was that this involves both a female villain,
okay,
which, you know, we've only had once before, really, unless twice if you count Rosa Klebb.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
And a young female agent that he's mentoring. What do you guys think about that?
Hell yes. I mean, if you get someone like how they handled Sophie Marceau and The World Is Not Enough, that I thought that was a really good
She's going to be, this villain is going to be a wronged Me Too kind of a female.
Who I don't think decided, they'll be that
I do,
on the nose.
I do.
Really?
I think they're going to do that on the nose. And I think that she will.
I think it'll be a former flame.
Wait a minute. Is the mentor he's training going to then take over for the series after Daniel Craig bows out?
Well, no, you can't, because then you can't have it be James Bond. You can have a spinoff series it's Jinx.
Female protege, I don't think they're going there yet.
That's so funny.
You know, people make these overtures about how they, you know, it's important that we progress and all this stuff, but then these movies have to open in China. And China kind of doesn't give a shit about this stuff.
Yeah.
And so I think that they're going to look at a global box office, and they're going to pay, I don't want to be cynical, but I think they're going to pay some lip service to some of the changing time stuff, but they know that they need to keep it at a certain level of expectation.
Well, I don't see. I think they can do what I'm saying without it really, like, without them really hitting us over the head with it.
Yeah, I think
like, I think can be clear from the villain start.
Oh yeah.
And I think that's fine. But at the end of the day, it's a MacGuffin. Whatever she's going to be doing, or the villain is going to be doing. But I think, you know, with the China stuff, you always have to worry about getting exclusive broadcast rights.
Oh, duh.
because if you're getting your news from Elliot Carver...
I'm not familiar.
You're getting tomorrow's news today. anyway, now back to Bond 25. But I think that female protege, I like that idea. I'd be into seeing a... You know what I would like to see? A Taika Waititi directed James Bond movie.
Well, sure.
A Thor Ragnarok style James Bond movie would just delight
me. I love him. I love all his work, but I don't think
doesn't sit well.
Unless you bring in Roger Moore back.
Well, yeah, that's the question. What sort of Bond adventure does Craig want to go off on? And do you think that Boyle wants to give you a self-serious Chris Nolan type Bond? I don't.
No, but if
I think it's closer to what he's saying.
I think it's going to be cooler.
Yeah.
And I use that in quotes, like whether it truly is cooler or not, it'll have a flair of I don't think I've seen a Boyle movie that didn't have an editing style that wasn't self-reflexive, like that you didn't know was happening.
Sure.
You know, Bond isn't known for that kind of thing, except early on.
Listen,
What if it's
a callback to the Peter Hunt era?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, that you could make a case that Peter Hunt is a proto Trainspotting type movie with these quick cuts and stuff and like cuts in time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. I mean, what type of Danny Boyle movie do you think is going to most closely resemble this Bond movie? Is it going to be something flashy like Trainspotting or more like Shallow Grave when it was a little more nuanced and like more mainstream? Or I haven't seen Slumdog Millionaire. Okay.
I want to know what he... I would like to know what James Bond is to Danny Boyle.
Yeah.
Like, sure. That's what I would like to know. I'd like to have an interview with Danny Boyle.
Is he revered or is he to be like laughed at a little?
Or would it be like, you know, would it be like me taking over the
Indiana Jones
franchise. What, like if I had to like reboot Parks and Rec, and they were like, "We need you to reboot Parks and Rec," I'd be like, "Okay, I can do that." And then I'd go back and watch Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
Because it was like a thing that like I understand is great and people loved it, and I just never caught it and I never watched it.
Gotcha.
And I wonder if that's what I wonder but what Danny Boyle's
he's certainly is. Whether he's familiar with Spectre or not, he's certainly familiar with Bond. It's like steeped in the culture so deeply, he would know it all the way up.
You'll recall the scene in Trainspotting where they're doing competing Sean Connery impressions.
That's right. And you'll recall that he directed the whole Olympics skydiving thing with the Queen and Daniel Craig as Bond.
Yeah, I think he's in it. I think he's in it in the same level that Sam Mendes was, where mm-hmm. he grew up watching it and he's a fan. But I think his take will be very different.
Yeah.
That's what's exciting about it. It's like it's somebody who's kind of got a legacy attachment to the franchise and showed up with an idea that got all the other people excited about it. And who knows?
Who's distributing the movie?
That's a damn good
question. It's not Anna Burnham. They're not distributing.
No. There's a lot of misinformation out there about what's official and what's not. And the last official thing we heard is that MGM is holding out for someone to buy them and dangling the Bond
exactly,
thing.
The Bond franchise is there as part of it.
So if they want, if they get bought by Fox, you know, they can kind of help deliver that, but they have a deal with Annapurna.
If they get bought by Fox, then they end up in the Disney stable.
Mm-hmm. I don't want them at
Good
Disney.
God.
Like, let yeah. one thing be
Good
sacred.
God.
Jesus Christ. Then they're going to milk the shit out of it. Well, oh, forget it.
Well, maybe they do a stunt spectacular.
All right, I'm in.
Yeah, anyway, that's one step closer to getting your theme park
I'm
a
in.
Reality.
I'm in. Let's go, Disney.
Nice.
So, here are the things I'm thinking about if Danny Boyle ends up making this. It's Craig's last film. That's significant. Is it a tie-in to four films that, whether they meant to or not, are now inexplicably tied together into a quadrilogy? And certainly they did not all intend to be that way. Mm-hmm. Is that going to be used? Will it be light? Will it be dark? And will it put a button on his tenure? I think that's virtually assured. Like,
did anyone get a button?
No. But they know going in with this one. They didn't know with Brosnan. They knew with Moore, but that was also of an era where it was just, no, this whole thing's meant to be continued on as a character, not an actor. This is a different time. I think they're going to tie it up in some way, and I think they're going to send him off with a button. But I don't know that this movie will in itself be a conclusion story. I think they may just do it cursorily or something.
I can't imagine they do that.
Yeah. Think back to how Skyfall ended, where it just ended him in front of M's desk, and it's this eternal loop, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that's probably Boyle's sentiment. Like, he can't really just redo that thing, but I think it's just returning him to his continuum.
Skyfall needs to be made now.
Yeah, this should have been his last movie. Yeah. That's for sure.
It's so weird.
But I also think when you said, is it going to be tied to all of it, the way Skyfall wasn't tied to it at the time, they need to redo that.
Yeah, that was highly tied to the franchise, but not at all tied to Daniel Craig's arc.
Mm-hmm.
Did they? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now it is Silva's under Spectre.
Yeah, I think Boyle's idea, if they start getting their fingers in this pie and trying to connect it to stuff, it'll only dilute it. But I have a suspicion Boyle's idea is a standalone thing. And I'm excited by that. Because who really wants to have part five?
I don't, but I do feel like some nod has to be made, because him walking off with Swan was different than him walking off with every other girl, in that he was quitting the service to be with her. And that is substantially different. So I feel like he's got to get killed. She's probably dying still. I still think they're going to work that in.
Does he ever say, I quit?
He throws his gun off the bridge.
Well,
but that's kind of
it. It's just a statement.
Exactly. They kept it soft.
No, but I think the important thing to remember is she's not going to be with him if he's in this world. And he's giving it up to be with her.
What if they are... What if it picks up, the cold open of the Danny Boyle movie picks up with them on their... On a weekend away somewhere, and they're just having like their ninth fight over the towels in the hotel room.
And that's it.
This is not for me.
I can't do it.
I appreciate you, but I've gotta go. And then he jumps out the window with his grappling hook belt.
Yeah.
She's like, it just opens with her going, why do you keep calling me Vespa?
Or if he's like, if she's like, I don't know where I want to go eat.
That's
and because Bond has never really been in a relationship.
Yeah.
Like, he just starts to lose his mind in a real relationship, and then he's like, he walks out the door, and then theme music happens, and then we're back at M's office.
There's no action. It's only
it's all a relationship fight.
For
it's
20
all,
minutes.
It's him not knowing how to be in a relationship because he's never been in a relationship.
Or he's just like trying to fry an egg and he can't do it. Or like comb a kid's hair. He's got kids.
He's got children now.
It's funny, but that's sort of how it was addressed in Fleming's From Russia with Love. You know, after the end of Diamonds Are Forever, Tiffany Case moved in with him.
Yeah.
And then there was this whole story about how he couldn't handle having a relationship with a woman. And so she split and married some military guy in the America.
That's right. Yeah.
And that's the other thing you get from these crazy Bond fans. They're like, I want to see Bond having a day in the office. Because they want to see all the weird between the Avengers shit.
1,000%.
How much real estate do you put into that? It'd be cool to see.
You know,
what does he do in the office?
This is something that can't happen. They won't do it. But it's something I would love to see.
He just throws darts. Like, he doesn't do paperwork.
Like the, again, I hate to bring this back to Taika Waititi here, but that short that they did.
Oh, sure.
With Hemsworth. As like what Thor was up to during the Civil War, Marvel Civil War, where it's just him living in Australia with a roommate.
Yeah.
And like, that was like wonderful. Like, that was so funny and it was great. Like, give me a 5 or 6 minute short. In run up to this movie of either Bond just strolling through the office, talking to Moneypenny, talking to Q.
Yeah.
You know, him in the restroom, like trying to avoid Tanner. Like, it'd be that way. Anyway.
I think Boyle could give you a 90-second version of that.
Yeah, I'm going to propose that we pause here, watch his Olympics video, and then come back and give our thoughts and see, like, if we can glean anything from.
Does he say anything in the Olympic video?
Well, let's do that. We'll be right back. But we'll see something of Danny Boyle in that. I know it's not quite the same thing, but all right, hold on. Well, we're back. And we know that
I can't say that we're better off.
Well, we know that Danny Boyle can make a hell of a tourism video.
Yes.
He knows his beats humor-wise, like set up and punch.
Is that what you took away from that?
Yeah, I thought it was well made. Okay. For what it was, I'm judging it as an Olympics,
of course,
goodwill propaganda video.
Yeah.
But also, like, he's known for using innovative cinematography in his films as well.
Well, stylistically. The editing choice of the speed change on
the speed ramp,
every other shot of a crowd reacting or corgis reacting or people waving or a piss poor CG job on Winston Churchill.
I thought that was all right. What I'm saying is that worked on me. I'd go to England. How would you guys feel about like GoPro shots, GoPro type body length shots in a Bond movie or something like that?
It would depend. Like when he was poisoned in Casino Royale, I'd be into that.
Yeah.
I think one thing we can just sort of say we don't have to worry about is there won't be any CGI Churchill in Bond 25. Think about this. He's got this out of his system.
Hang on.
Maybe in the opening titles.
What if he loved it so much?
He's just hooked.
His idea is that the villain is this Churchill statue. That's been on the Thames.
Mr. Bond. British golem.
Mr. Bond.
Well, hell.
But yeah, I mean, seeing that did not instill confidence in me.
Really?
It also did not distill confidence.
Oh, okay.
So I feel the same.
I feel like if you read between the lines of that film, there was all kinds of sort of constrictions on what they were able to do and how quickly they had to do it. And they had to shoot around a 80-something-year-old queen.
You can call her a queen. Imagine the restrictions from Buckingham Palace and the Olympic Committee, and you're right, the time frame and like shooting within the city. It's amazing they got, well, maybe that's also where they could open some doors. And
I bet you Daniel Craig was the most difficult person on that shoot.
I think it was the corgi on the right.
The corgi on the right.
Okay.
So what I'm taking away from this is you're not feeling great about Bond 25.
I am worried about it. And, cautiously optimistic as I tend to be as these movies are approaching their rolling of the first frames of film.
Let me ask you this, given what you know now of what you know of Danny Boyle and that you know that there was a Purvis and Wade script, what would you choose right now if you had to pick one and to move forward, which would it rather be?
Who's my director? Is it Danny Boyle as my director, but I choose which script?
It'll probably be Jan de Bonge or whatever his name is.
Now, there's a weird rumor that he's pissed off, that he like carved out a bunch of time.
I'm sure he did. He was close to being it.
But now he's jumped over to Jordan Peele's Lovecraft Country.
So. Oh, wow. That's exciting.
Yeah.
So what would you choose? What would you guys choose, both of you?
Ron Howard.
Jesus Christ. I'd rather them always take a risk. Than
I love the
safe
idea.
Route.
Let's roll the dice.
Yeah, because I love those outliers. Give me some weird Bond movie.
But the outliers don't exist because the producers took a risk. The outliers exist because it was a swing and a miss.
Well, I guess I'd like to.
You know what I mean?
Big
like the
swing.
Biggest outlier, I think, in the franchise's tenure is Quantum of Solace, in the sense that it was a movie that was written on the go because of a writer's strike. So it becomes an outlier.
But they didn't intend it to be. They were just basically following on the heels of Casino Royale. I'd say Honor Majesty's Secret Service is the biggest outlier.
It's weird
for the
that
time.
Matt Myra would say that Quantum's an outlier, because I feel like in a week's time, he's going to tell me that he didn't view it as an outlier.
Yeah.
Did I say that later on?
You will say that.
I think you're right. It's a great prediction.
But to my actual point of like the set, what I was saying to you and what I was saying to you, Phil, is that the term of outlier, right? They don't have many. I don't think Quantum of Solace is an outlier in the sense of what the finished product is, but I do think it's an outlier in the sense of the circumstances of which it was made.
Yeah.
Because they could not plan for it. Mm-hmm. They could not plan for the writer's strike.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they had to deal with this thing that was thrown at them. And that's what I think makes it an outlier in production standpoint. But like this whole idea of like throwing the script out so close to when they were going to sign a director. I mean, this thing is supposed to come out when?
November 8th, 2019.
Next year. But the rumor is that the Purvis and Wade was a On Her Majesty's Secret Service sort of parallel.
I don't have anything to back that up. I don't have anything that sort of speaks to that. I think it's just a lot of people assuming and a lot of rumor.
Wasn't there a leak at some point about that? It was just pure rumor?
This one, yeah.
Okay.
But here's a thought. What if they're throwing that script away because of the lesson that they learned with Spectre?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What if they're like, no, we're not going to throw good money after bad?
They didn't learn that lesson.
Well,
how do we know? This is the very next film.
No, I'm saying they didn't. I don't think they took it. I don't think they think of Spectre as a failure.
I'll tell you why I think they do. When Quantum came out, so when Casino Royale came out, they put it out on Blu-ray like three times. There's commentaries, there's all this other stuff. When Quantum came out, there was nothing on that disc. Skyfall came out, three commentary tracks, super proud of it, all this other stuff. Spectre came out, nothing. I think when they're not into a movie, it leaks through in certain ways. They knew that wasn't a home run.
And that one didn't, they do consider that one not to be a failure financially, but compared to Skyfall, it took a real dip in earnings.
Well, Skyfall made $1 billion, so that's going to happen.
But what if, do you think that Danny Boyle comes in and they're just like psyched to have Danny Boyle, or that they really also like the idea? Craig
have to like the
likes
idea.
The idea,
yeah, they have
right?
to like the idea. Like I was saying earlier, like they're not going to like, again, I don't think Danny Boyle is enough for them to go, whatever you want, sir.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like they're getting, I don't know who gets Chris that Nolan. Out of James Bond.
But I think
you think Chris Nolan does? Yeah.
I think he does, because in England, he's like their almost laureate filmmaker.
Well, buckle up. Barbara Broccoli's American.
No, I know.
She just lives there.
But she's, you know, Eon is basically English.
Yeah, I know. But
this is interesting.
No, I don't think he does it. I don't think he does it. Honestly, I don't think he does it. I think that if his script is not good and his idea is not good, Danny Boyle is not directing this movie, because if Danny Boyle's thing is like, I will direct this movie if I can do this script, they look at the script and go, it's not great. Thank you so much for coming to us, but no.
But he's also said, I believe, that he has to like it. Like, he has to see this script and go, this is what I want to do.
He meaning Daniel Craig?
Danny Boyle. Because wasn't the whole idea that they went and pitched this idea and they went, go away, have a screenwriter write it, and then if Danny Boyle likes it, then he'll do it.
Who were they saying go away?
The screenwriter and
go
Danny.
Off and write it.
Go away like shoe.
Yeah. So let's say it's shit. Fuck off. Let's say it's shit. So then they've got to find a director, or do they have somebody back pocketed already? Because Jan Demange has sort of been.
Yeah. But maybe finally then Denis Villeneuve will be open, or he's still doing
Dune.
He's
got 5 years of Dune ahead of him. I've heard weird rumblings from those same little forums that tend to have weird information that turns out to be true, that Sam Mendes is back pocket.
No.
It can't be, right?
What?
Can't that be right?
I don't want that to be.
I've heard, again, from those same forums that Craig and Mendes parted on not great terms after Spectre.
Oh, that's interesting.
I've heard that too.
And that's just gossip. So, but who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, if it's true, then that would mean he can't be coming back. And I think if you look at both those films, like I you know how much I love Skyfall, and I think I give Mendez so much credit for that, for re-energizing mm-hmm. that and making that perfect sort of reclamation of the formula. But he was out of ideas by Spectre, I feel like.
What other information do your sparrows tell you?
A lot of the forums that I dig into, and I don't know if it's time to do this, but are more about like buying shit than having actual critical thought.
Uh-huh.
So I know. So I don't have a lot of other Bond 25 rumors for you.
All right. If you guys had to cast the female mentor or the apprentice,
the protege,
and the villain,
Saoirse Ronan. Would be the protege, and the villain would be, boy, oh boy.
I think they should have saved Monica Bellucci.
James Bonding Podcast!
Determination. Hustle. Thrilling action. Rec League Basketball.
Pistol Shrimps Radio is back wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
If you don't know the show, Mark McConville and me, myself, Gourley, from Super Ego, and a million more great podcasts like I Was There Too. Oh, and I don't know, James Bonding, record live from the Los Angeles Women's Rec Basketball League.
Oh, they call the courtside action as it happens, whether they know anything about basketball or not, and quite frankly, they do not.
I can confirm that. And just like Mark and myself, the show is really funny. That feels weird reading that own
copy
sure about myself.
It sure does. Matt, let me help you out there. The show's very funny. You know, they make ridiculous and absurd commentary, and they cheer on the Pistol Shrimps. These are athletes like Aubrey Plaza, Stephanie Allen, Maria Bislucci, and Amanda Lund. These are some of your favorite guests of James Bond, and guys.
Get in on the most thrilling almost sports event of the season with Earwolf's most ignorant sports announcers.
Oh, you can subscribe to Pistol Shrimps Radio now in your favorite podcast app like Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or quite frankly, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Pistol Shrimps action.
James Bonding Podcast.
No, I don't think you even need to go that peer. I think you can go someone younger than Bond be the villain.
But I just like her for her gravitas, you know, or something. I don't know. She'd be good. Let me think about this.
I like Letitia Wright as the protege.
Who's that?
She was Shuri in Black Panther. She was his little sister.
Oh, she was great.
Yeah.
Oh,
she was also in a really good episode of Black Mirror.
She was great.
She'd be a fun protege.
She was, honestly, I think she's the... I had the most fun watching her on screen than anyone in the last like 5 or 10 yeah. years.
Yeah.
I just was like kind of still drawn movie. To her. I was like, mm-hmm. she is really enjoyable to watch.
Absolutely. I'd go super stunt casting on, but there's precedent with Charles Gray, and there's precedent with Jodan Baker.
Wait, where are we heading?
I love
with this.
Hold
on.
I love
on.
Where we're going.
I would bring back Rosamund Pike to be the female villain.
Oh, yeah, Berry. Sure.
Not Halle Berry.
Rosamund Pike would be great.
She has matured into like the perfect. Like, if you saw Gone Girl, she is terrifying.
Yeah.
So sorry.
So, what about Imogen Poots? Do you know her?
I do. She seems a little lightweight for me.
Yeah.
My second choice would be Natalie Dormer for either role.
We're just like over the Saoirse Ronan thing.
Wait, she's Natalie Dormer.
Saoirse
Ronan. What Natalie Dormer? What do I know her from?
She was in Game of Thrones. She was in The Hunger Games.
Oh, she's, yeah, she's...
Sometimes she got that side shave going on.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Oh, what about Cersei from Game of Thrones? Lena Headey or Headey.
Acceptable.
Yeah.
I would take her as the villain.
I think she'd be great.
Yeah.
That's a little bit typecasting.
You don't want Helen Mirren to be the villain?
Yeah, I do. Now that you mention it, yes, I do.
In a James Bond film, uh-huh. I think is like a home run.
There's certain ones that are perfect, but they've been used up somewhere. Like in Helen Mirren, she burned it off in Red a little bit, the spy thing.
Yeah, okay.
And Charlize Theron burned off the supervillain thing in the last Fast and Furious movie.
Right.
But she would be interesting.
She would have been
well.
Great.
I don't know. Charlize, Atomic Blonde didn't do it for me.
That wasn't her fault, though.
I don't know. I didn't feel like she was doing it for me in that. She was just a little too, like, almost underacting on purpose to let you fill in the blanks, and it somehow didn't work for me.
I have it.
What do you got?
The villain. Laura Dern.
Interesting.
I like it.
I don't know.
I'm weighing.
I'm gonna say
what if she has purple hair and unpopular. She's an admiral?
I may be with you on this.
She has... she's not sexy to me. And I think that Bond's world, not just, I don't mean to be reductive, but Bond's world needs to be sexy.
Disagree. You need a paleobotanist that gets your gears going.
I find her sexy. I find it hard to take her out of like contemporary Southwest, like just her way of speaking doesn't work for me in genre films.
She's homespun. And I don't even want the villain to be an American to that point. I want it to be a little more exotic, if possible.
Rachel Weisz.
Oh, that'd be great because they're married.
That's some super stunt casting and I'm into
that
it.
That would be great.
Yeah.
I just watched The Constant Gardener.
Oh, gosh.
It's the most depressing movie ever. She's
such a good actress.
She's incredible.
I wonder if that'd be fun for them. I wonder if that was one of the things that got Daniel Craig excited about this idea.
Guys, I love it.
And then you get Joseph Fiennes in there as like her boss.
No, come on.
Come on.
Ray crazy. Fine.
Come on. No, Joseph Fiennes.
Joseph. Oh, geez.
His brother.
Yeah. Oh, we're going family tree.
We're going super stunts.
Hell.
And then
all the Skarsgårds. Every last fucking one of them.
Let's kill all the Skarsgårds.
And then you see John Cleese is in the movie as R again. He's been demoted.
Guys, we got to get serious here. This is going too far.
You're cautiously optimistic. I think Matt Gourley and I are more excited.
Very excited.
We're in that weird pink cloud of anticipation where anything could happen. So we're hoping for the best.
If you listen to the ramp up to Spectre, we were bitten hard.
But I feel like
we were so excited and we tricked ourselves, man. We tricked ourselves so hard into
loving that
movie.
But I feel like, Phil doesn't do that in the first place, but I feel like what was happening was the lead up to Spectre. And this feels like a 11th hour diversion and sort of saving from that.
It's possible.
Possibility. I'm not that excited about another Purvis and Wade.
No. I mean, who would be besides Neil Purvis and Robert Wade?
their staff. Their housekeeping staff.
I want that Toshin Archives book, but that gives me 5 years into the future. If I could have any magical item, you know, where I could read all about the behind the scenes of even the movies yet to be made.
Well,
sure.
I guess that really wouldn't spoil that much for you because the information in there isn't the plot.
Yeah, I don't want the plot. I want the production.
Yeah.
And I want
the dirt.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I mean,
we'll see what happens.
I think that if there is going to be a sort of mistake that we make running up to this movie, it's going to be getting too excited about
these things. What are you guys going to do spoiler wise?
I'll watch official trailers released. The end.
That's it.
Skyfall, I knew too much about. Spectre, I only did trailers. It would be really bold if I went no trailers at all this time. That's going to be too hard.
We can't do it because we do a weekly podcast. Oh, you have to talk about this.
You could avoid. It's your job now.
Yeah,
because you're becoming an expert, as we'll discuss next week. But there's been movies where I've tried to do that, and then I'm sitting in the theater, and the trailer starts.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I'm kind of hosed, where I'm sitting there with my fingers in my ears like a maniac.
That's true.
So,
but so probably soon we'll get that press conference in the next couple of months.
You'll get it around December.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's because that has to happen right now is like, is the script written?
It's being written.
The script is being written, right? that has to come back. There's got to be two or three swings at that afterwards. So that's going to put us out for probably another 3 or 4 months.
Casting.
And then once the script is decided upon, I mean, which they could do this sort of congruently and be like, I love this set piece, I love this set piece, I love this set piece. Then they have to sort of start scouting. Then they go do their location scouting, which they already have done some location scouting. We want to shoot in
Prague. They better not try to cram that in there.
But they're going to do that. And then they have to do the storyboarding and everything like that, and then they'll get to the casting, and then they'll get to the press conference.
It is crazy how quickly they still make Bond movies.
I know.
When it's all said and done, they have like a year of pre-production and then a year of production. It's crazy.
I think, again, there's another lesson to be taken away in Skyfall where they recognize that they don't need to globetrot. You know, this, it's a franchise of pinging back and forth. And so when they shot mostly in England for Skyfall, they reversed it for Spectre and it bit them in the ass because they spent so much money.
Mm.
Apparently, the official numbers for Spectre are just completely like trying to ass cover, and it's way more.
Oh, see, that's another reason they didn't make much money. Yeah.
And it's all subsidized, though, by those tie-ins, like the Heineken and the...
One hopes.
But they all are.
But they all are.
Yeah,
so it's just
but I mean, their bottom line, though...
They spent so much money on travel for Spectre that I think they're probably going to course correct. And I think that a Boyle story might see a little more like a Spycraft, a little more intimate Casino Royale kind of thing.
Oh, see, now you're exciting me even more.
I just said Spycraft and you just perked up.
Give me some more Le Carre in my Bond.
Sure.
But I know they're supposed to be different, but I like when they flirt with each other a little.
Yeah.
You know?
The whole thing takes place at Le Medicam.
Oh.
Le Medicam. She can take you to Le Medicam. He's everywhere. You're a cunt.
Keep looking, Mr. Scaramanga.
Where can it be? I see you, Mrs. Caramanga.
I was very interested to meet you.
That's, you know what? That's what we, well, let's hope, if nothing else, that Bond 25's got a easily to impersonate villain that we can kind of catchphrases, yeah, meme the fuck out of it. You know,
yeah,
that'll be the value.
I want a good henchman.
Yeah, we had almost a good henchman.
I think, yeah, Hinks was pretty good.
I think
good.
Hinks is decent. But, like, you know, if you go back henchman-wise, we haven't had, like, an iconic, great henchman.
Is Xenia the last one? Or Diamond Face?
Xenia, yes. And Mayday. Of the last, like, 30 years?
Wow.
That's what I'm saying. I'm
because
saying
the henchman
Xenia
thing is generally kind of wacky, so it's hard
to
get.
Yeah, but, like, going before that, you had so many, like, Jaws, Teehee, Knick-Knack, Teehee.
That'll make sense next
week. Odd Job,
real
Whisper,
colorful ones.
Just, like, yeah, like, they can... I think the beauty of a henchman is that they have some sort of quirk that is explained to us. Whereas Hinks, I feel like if someone had given a line to someone else, an expositional line about Hinks,
yeah,
that was like, he doesn't talk, blah, 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 blah. His voice, his larynx was ripped out in 1980, whatever. Just something like that. Then I find that, then I would be like, Hinks was pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. He doesn't have something as special about
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
But in this world, it's a little harder to pull
press
that off.
On, he's got press on nails.
Yeah.
Like that's
steel nails.
Thing.
All those names you just mentioned are like sort of like this sort of xenophobic kind of, you know, this guy's black and this guy's weird French dwarf.
Not,
and,
yeah.
I think Mayday is like.
Well, they exploited her otherness, I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
Right? And then so as the franchise tries to not do that, suddenly, you know, the Brosnan era has a bunch of rappers as hench people and and the Diamond Face guy, which, you know, was, I think, okay on paper.
Zao.
And then by the time you get to Craig, they're just like, oh, just make them gross Euro trash people.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Casino Royale.
I guess it's Elvis.
Quantum,
Elvis is the one.
Elvis and what's that guy's name in Casino Royale? It starts with a K. Like,
oof.
The bald guy that's like Lashif's right hand man.
Oh, Kananga.
Yeah, that's it.
The alligator farm wrestler.
Kurt. I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, but
Kevin.
That's just
Kevin.
Like.
This
but
is
like,
Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about like Goldie and Stomper and just like dud after dud after dud.
Yeah, Hinks is the first proper henchman in quite a while.
At least in Octopussy. I mean, I'm going back, so you go back before Mayday and you go to like Octopussy. At least in Octopussy you have
Gobinda.
Yeah, who's like a menacing guy who shoots a blunderbuss. Like that's fun to me.
I think that's something the real world does actually lack, because there are oligarchs and creepy people, but they always have bodyguards. But who does anybody actually have like a noticeable, distinct, quirky henchman person?
Colorful one, huh?
I would love that.
Yeah,
I would like someone to take their differently abledness and turn it into a new abledness.
That's like Kingsman.
That sounds like a minefield.
Yeah,
but yeah, the henchwoman in Kingsman did that pretty well. Yeah. I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So, what else should we know? Should we expect?
About 25?
Yeah.
Nothing.
I don't know. I think we've milked it.
Okay.
I want to talk to you about an article that was in GQ last week.
Oh, I read that.
It's the Gentleman's Quarterly that comes out monthly.
They discovered a subreddit where people were just going bananas over Bond's outfit in the finale of Skyfall. His Scottish barber jacket, his NPL sweater.
By the way, I feel like somehow I created that subreddit inadvertently by owning every piece of that outfit.
Well, I'm not going to say I don't own every piece there, but I didn't go near the subreddit.
I never got it.
I am going to say I don't own any of those pieces.
And it got me thinking about you guys, and it got me thinking about how Mr. Myra has absorbed some Bond stuff into his life. you tend to have not. And there's a whole world out there where they go like crazy for this stuff.
Yeah.
And so there's a debate about whether or not that outfit is iconic or the most influential outfit, because it was all attainable pieces. You can go out and buy all the stuff. You don't go to anywhere in a tuxedo necessarily, right, as your normal guy. I argued that it was a polo shirt. He brought back a polo shirt.
And I sit here in polo shirts.
Honestly, almost wore a polo shirt.
Man, yeah. That would have been sweet. But it got me wondering about, you know, I think you quote the James Bond lifestyle site quite a bit.
Yeah.
But there's three others that I want to point you to that are fun for sourcing this stuff.
Okay.
One is called The Bond Experience. And it's a CEO in outside of Philly.
I believe I've traveled to that website.
He's a lovely man. I've met him once or twice at events. And he is so immersed in this stuff that he's now like this brand ambassador, and they just send him things and he does these vlogs about them. He bought an Aston Martin this year. He realized that the suits don't look great if you don't have a body. So he like did P90X and he's all jacked.
Wow.
He's like really, really gone for it. There's another one that, I'm flaking on it now. I have it in my notes.
Well, I'm happy to vamp while that's going on. It's interesting, this whole sort of, world of Bond, of the material world of Bond,
right?
And how I describe it as like being able to cosplay every day without anyone knowing you're cosplaying.
Exactly. Mm. It's an if you're not full on cosplaying, if you're not putting on the entire outfit,
yeah.
It's this weird invisible, not weird. It's this invisible little moment where you can go, I've got the best watch, as you once said on this podcast. You said if you're a man of a certain age, you want to know what's quality.
Yes.
And it's just this shorthand list of. These brands are quality brands. Mm-hmm. And so you can kind of, you know, so I put on a great pair of shoes and you kind of just puts a little spring in your
Phil's
step.
Got the quantum.
You know, it's funny.
Rider 3 Chuck is today.
I was literally thinking today, I was thinking, and I almost said this out loud to you two gentlemen, of the fact that like it has been now so long since a James Bond movie has come out that I feel like everything I know is unfashionable. Do you know what I mean? Like
you don't know like, what clothes to buy.
What am I doing?
I do feel like
my eyeglasses are James Bond sunglasses.
I love it. Love it. I think in a very real sense, fashion has slowed down quite a bit. If you look at like 65 to 75, it's crazy how different fashions are. But in the last 15 years, it's kind of slowed down quite a bit.
I think to us. Well, but then I think you think about, I think once you get into like the world of like streetwear and like Supreme and like the sneakers are huge now. And, you know, the sweatpants that have huge long crotches, like those are very stylish things that I will never wear.
Yeah.
So for me, fashion... I like to think of fashion not as like what John Mayer is wearing right now on an Instagram video, but more of like what Daniel Craig is wearing at a press interview.
But I take your point. You're saying even like adult regular wear didn't change that much in 10 or did change more in 10 years than it has for like the three of us probably look relatively similar to what we did 10 years ago.
Yeah.
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 I do think once you age out of it, and I guess it's the bigger question of fashion versus style. Fashion is what he's describing as of the moment and it's gone.
Right.
Style is timeless.
I agree. Yeah.
Theoretically.
Right. Like you look at the style, you look at the way everyone's dressed in the first Ghostbusters movie, it's timeless.
Yeah.
Like they're all constantly in buttoned ups and suits and, and it, like you watch that movie now and it's timeless. Like,
and Bond for the most part, like early Bond is timeless. Roger Moore is very dated.
Yeah. Cause well, he went for fashion.
Yeah.
Over style.
That's right.
And his stuff did kind of, he has a bigger spectrum. He also, until Craig took the role, had the longest tenure.
Yeah.
So you saw the most change.
By the way, I like to think that those places, when I talked to Daniel Craig on that Nerdist podcast, I bet they had a fucking field day.
Oh, sure.
With the things I was asking.
Absolutely. Mm. I remember the other one I want to tell you about. Once it's the suits of James Bond, which you guys have probably seen.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
That guy is super detailed.
Yeah.
This is just an observation, but he's gotten really cranky about the Craig era over the course of a year. He used to be sort of objective about it, and now he's just throwing shade at all of Craig's outfits because he's saying they're going to date quickly because of the cuts and whatnot.
I wonder about that. They are so tightly cut that I don't think in the same way that I think Brosnan's age horribly.
But what's great about the
not
Craig
all
stuff,
of the
I know
suits,
I like
though.
That one too.
What's great about the Craig stuff is that again in Skyfall they made the clothing like tied it to the themes of the movie.
Mm.
Like it made sense that he looked the way he did in that movie.
Yeah.
Even if he was busting out of the suit so much, somewhat. And I think that's sort of what we respond to with Craig, the way we responded to Connery. There's the dandy, there's Roger Moore and there's Pierce Brosnan. But when it looks like a bricklayer in the most expensive suit in the world, I mean, you got Connery, you got Craig. That's just a combination that does it.
And I will say, I have
it
worn
does it for you. Yeah,
yeah,
me too.
The Shanghai outfit and the Scotland outfit of Daniel Craig and Skyfall. I have worn both of those outfits fully,
top to bottom,
many times.
Yeah,
not as much as I'd like because it does get cold very often here.
I know that's the problem.
But like, you walk out the door, and you feel like, all right, I know how to dress.
Yeah,
including the scarf.
Yeah,
that's a hard one.
Yeah.
Because that scarf, he looks a little fancy.
Oh, I love it.
When he's wearing that scarf.
Oh, God. No. You know what? If I had the balls, here's what I'd be wearing. An open, every day. A button-up open down to the second button with one of those little scarves that's just tied in the little tails, kind of like... hook out, you know, like a Tuscan man out on his like out in his garden.
Hell
like
yes.
Like I love like that look, and that is as dandy as you can
whenever
get.
Whenever I picture Fleming, that's what he's wearing. Mm-hmm. He wears a scarf like that.
You haven't seen it in years, and then I saw Jude Law wearing that recently, well, or like years ago or something.
He is the young pope.
He is.
What I think is worth noticing about the Bond fashion thing and the explosion of it is that Craig is the first Bond to be the Bond on screen when you could go Google the shoes.
Yeah, right. Like
when you could just source every last thing that he wore. And it has been a boon for all those clothing labels. Billy Reid, who made that pea coat that you wore, their sales are up like, you know.
Oh, they have to be.
Because prior to that, it was always like an ad in a magazine of like, these are the sunglasses Brosnan wears. And
You'd have to be walking by the Crockett and Jones to notice the mm-hmm. Crockett and Jones had a Skyfall thing mm-hmm. in the window.
And the Omega ad is the choice of James Bond.
Yes. Right?
Look at you guys. So, those watches are amazing.
You know, Mr. Myra has an Omega Seamaster 300 with a NATO strap on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I did not bring my NATO strap, but I have put this one on a NATO strap from time to time.
You know what? It's always a good move. I find it to be this. Well, for a long time, actually, I wore this just with the brown leather strap, which mm-hmm. is how Daniel Craig wears his.
Sure.
When I tried his on.
Oh, right.
It was on a brown leather shirt.
Nice. Now, I want to know about your NATO tuck, because that's a point of contention online as well.
Yeah, whether to tuck or not. I tuck inside, just outside. Because I started tucking, and now when you untuck, it's got a bend to it, and I'm like, well, this is just looks stilly. Mm-hmm. So I tuck.
Fair enough.
I'm a tucker. I believe James Bond does not tuck.
I think it's an inside tuck as opposed to an outside tuck.
Oh, like going the...
It goes the other way.
Yeah, so this one tucks in outside. Right.
Oh, what have we here?
Oh my goodness. If I don't see someone who looks like they're trying to figure out what's going on with that Moonraker.
This is my Sinclair Safari jacket.
Very nice, very nice.
I just love it.
Oh, good grief. You wear it well. It looks good on you.
You are a good frame to dress, my friend. You are lucky that way.
I don't know about that, but thank you. I think
I can't wait to design more outfits for you.
Please do.
I'd be happy to.
You can design and send your outfits to James Bonding, care of Earwolf.
So the Tom Ford suit, as we all are familiar with on Daniel Craig, is something I've been wanting to purchase and pull the trigger on for a mm-hmm. long time, but I've never been at the weight where I was like, this is my weight, I'm gonna stay here for a long time, so I cannot justify these $6,000 for the suit. So I have never pulled the trigger. I wanted to get married in a Tom Ford tuxedo, but I was like, you know what, why don't we just pay for half the wedding instead of buying this tuxedo?
Well, you had an attack of reason.
Yeah.
Okay.
But instead, I just, you know, I knocked it off. I went with the Brooks Brothers tuxedo that looked very similar to the Tom Ford tuxedo. Mm-hmm. Not the same cut ever, but...
I've not yet pulled a trigger on a Tom Ford item beyond sunglasses myself.
Oh, yeah.
What are like those Spectre sunglasses going to run you?
There's a couple. There's this one the and funeral there's the Snowdens. Ones. Those are the Snowdens. Those are my backup pair of eyeglasses.
What do they run you? They're about $250 maybe?
How much?
$250.
Oh.
Yeah, you can go, but if you go to Tom Ford and buy them, they're $450. Like you pay full retail.
Well, where do you get them for $250?
You go online. You can get them on Amazon from a reputable seller.
I mean, that's still a lot for sunglasses, but I was expecting something like those to be like $500 if they're Tom Ford or something.
They're a little more attainable. That sort of makes it, you know, part of the
But like, I have a Tom Ford wallet. I bought at the Tom Ford outlet when I was in Palm Springs.
Yeah.
I would never have a Tom Ford wallet had I not become familiar with the brand through my sunglasses that are actually eyeglasses.
So I've had the experience. Well, I haven't done the Tom Ford thing, but you know, Mason and Sons in London, who resurrected the Anthony Sinclair brand, do a whole. It's an experience to go there and get fitted for a suit and whatnot. And I did that. It was delightful. They've got a shop in New York now, so you can not have to, you know, leave the country.
I've become very friendly with the Crockett and Jones shop in Manhattan.
Yeah,
up on 55th and 5th. It's like a block away from the fucking shit tower.
A block away from the Crockett and Tubbs.
A block away from that Gucci that's in that big black building. Those guys are very nice. And, you know, I think I have four pairs of those boots only because...
The same model?
No.
Okay.
Just different styles of them. But only because the first pair I bought, I have worn into the ground. And once those are broken in, they're like the most comfortable things ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like... Well, I could spend $100 on a pair of boots every year, or I could spend $500 once and then have them for. I've now had those Skyfall boots for.
Yeah.
When did that movie come out? 2012.
$500 boots. Wow. That'd be tough.
I've had it for 6 years. I've had those boots for 6 years.
So that's
$75 a year. It's a pair of boots.
They become a legacy part of your wardrobe.
That's true. If you guys had to choose one Bond item that you own, you only get to keep one. What is it going to be? What's your most go-to item?
It'd be the Skyfall watch that I got married in, just because I got married with that watch on.
You guys got married inside a watch?
We did. We all shrunk down.
Wow.
We used some fun technology, a little Zelensky tech and a little bit of the Pym tech.
Okay. Phil?
You know, weirdly, I'd probably say my Skyfall watch as well, just because of the sentimental value of it. My wife got it for me for our anniversary.
This is sweet, the both of you.
And we were in Switzerland, and it was just a real cool day.
Oh, my God.
But if you're talking clothing, it might be the Skyfall boots, because those guys taught me how to wear the right size shoe. Like, I spent an afternoon in there, and they were like, no, you see how this is doing this, and you see how it feels better?
I got to tell you, right? So I've told them 11 and a half, 11 and a half, 11 and a half. Mm-hmm. They're like, no, you're an 11 here. And the pair of boots I have that are an 11 are so uncomfortable. But every 11 and a half I have, thumbs up. Uh-oh. I actually recently went up to a 12 on a couple of them. But anyway, long story short, great boots.
Well, I'm choosing my Sinclair Safari jacket that Phil gave me because it's... Well, it's the only Bond item I own, but it would.
You think it is, but Matt is wearing a very close relative of the Adidas Gazelles that Bond is wearing in Skyfall when he's going through his physical.
Yeah, I've had these for 20 years, though.
I have those as well. They're great shoes. They're a great sneaker.
It's a weird habit that can get away from you, a weird hobby that can become a bigger thing, and I've seen it happen online. And
well,
and
I can tell you right now, Phil's got the Levi jacket, which...
I do.
That is I've got penny.
That's a good-looking jacket.
That is a jacket I have been like, oh, I would never be able to wear that. I'd never pull that off.
That's his Turkey Coast Scorpion drinking
when
jacket.
Bond is a bum, and that felt correct to me.
Yeah.
That felt to my personality.
Let's see that on you, Phil.
Bond... you just saw it on, didn't you?
Did it? I don't think
no,
did.
You didn't wear your coat out to lunch.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. It's nicely broken in. What I like to do is just touch it.
Oh, yeah.
I like to just put my hands on it because it's this real soft.
Now, Phil, have you ever thought about ordering the white shirt with the pattern?
They don't make those anymore.
Oh, they don't?
No. That was a Zara shirt. And,
Zara?
Those collectors that I was telling you about,
they snapped them up.
Wow. And if you see those online, those guys spend... I mean, I think it was like an $80 shirt, and those guys spend like $500 on an original.
Well, I've seen the barber coat go for
the barber one is crazy.
Fuck ton.
Is that one done?
There's
being
the
made?
First one that's the Z Zhang. Z Zhang is the name of that
Tokito.
Designer.
Yeah,
this is the Skyfall.
The Skyfall barber shotgun coat. I've seen that coat. That version of that code go for $1,200.
Good Lord!
And I think it sold for probably $400 or $600 when it came out. But then they released one. Under the barber, it's called the Commander B.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll confess among friends here that I did find out what that jacket was before the movie came out. And I owned it before Skyfall came out.
Great job, man.
And then I had it altered to be more screen accurate. You had certain buttons removed and a zipper taken off, and I did.
That's fabulous. That's fabulous.
Do they do that in the production, or they got a different version?
No, the costume designer gets their hands on it and tears it up and all that stuff. And,
wow.
Yeah, because it has this hood that you could zip on and remove. Yeah. And he doesn't wear the hood, obviously.
Oh, right.
So.
Oh, well
done. I sold that hood online for like $100 to
somebody.
You
sold the hood?
Jeez.
Do you keep the triangle on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's still awesome.
The one thing, I will say this, the one thing I would like to own from the James Bond Daniel Craig era of movies that I know that I will never own because my wife will never let me do it. I want the James Bond's father's shotgun.
Well, sure.
Which is licensed, and they made them.
What?
Oh, wow.
You didn't know that they made those?
I think
they made a few of them.
Heard this, maybe?
And I think they are not...
Who makes them?
It's the old gun company in England.
And are they monogrammed AB?
Yes.
Are you kidding?
Not kidding.
Oh, my God.
That's like the thing I would be like, you know what? I want that shotgun, but my wife, although I wonder if she would let me get it,
how much
never
is
get
that?
Shells for it, and just put it up on the wall.
Yeah. How much is that?
I feel like when I was looking at it, it was $4,000 to $9,000.
Oof.
That's too much.
That's the thing. These things, it's just like I can never quite go that far with just something I have adoration
for. It's an Anderson Wheeler 500 Nitro Double Rifle. And it came with a, when you would buy it, let me show you the case here.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, that's pretty.
I mean, come on.
Sure.
What a gorgeous piece of memorabilia to have.
Hell yes.
That you will never... Oh, I'm sorry. The exact same rifle as used by Bond in Skyfall can be custom ordered at Anderson Wheeler for approximately $24,500.
Oh. Matt left the room. Let's order it on his computer.
Matt, can I borrow $24,500? That's actually how much that rifle is.
Yes, but I have a quick question. Can I borrow that money to lend to you?
Yes, deal.
Do you have a picture of it? Let me see.
I do. Let me pop back here. Oh, boy. Guys, I hope you're excited about the James Bond memorabilia that we're discussing here. He's in love with it.
More in love with a case. I love a good case.
Oh, yeah, like sure.
Something lined. That has a quality case.
Sure.
Oh.
I just like the anagramness of it and God, I don't know. There's also like I don't walk around trying to pretend to be James Bond. Like,
no.
That's not my MO. I am a dirty vodka martini drinker just because like when I turned 21, this is the first drink I ordered.
Wow.
And that is just my, you know, I've developed the taste for them and I love them and I drink them whenever I'm having a drink with dinner or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't try to like, I don't pretend. Like a lot of these guys that you see, these pretend Bond guys that go full bore into it are just like the grossest.
It's kind of gross.
They're like the Trump kids. Yeah. They all have that sort of ugh to them.
Yeah.
Well, because Bond by definition wouldn't emulate someone else. You know what
right.
I mean?
Correct. It's the least Bond thing in the world to dress up like another person.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Give or take a clown.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a no-win situation.
Perfectly apply the makeup before you leave the trailer.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, I want to end with you guys. We all have to make one prediction about Bond 25.
Oh, before we do that,
yeah,
I know we're trying to wrap this up, but I wanted to extend an olive branch to Matt Myra about about Tomorrow Never Dies.
You shit faces. Oh, that's your right. feeling about the greatest this. Pierce Brosnan.
This is an olive branch.
Hey, it's okay. The offer is made. Whether it's accepted is not in my control. I feel like I want you to know that I have, since your podcast, bought Tomorrow Never Dies on Blu-ray. And I have, like, it was the one that wasn't in the collection.
Uh-huh. Mm.
I bought it, and I did find, you know, some merit in moments. I do think that Brosnan just deserved a better run than he got.
And, I agree with that.
But you know, that said, I wanted you to have something because
you can't argue with the fact that movie is so prototypical James Bond.
Do you not love how Phil always comes with gifts?
There's always gifts.
Phil, you're out of control right
now. So like
wrapped.
People like unboxing podcasts,
Phil,
right?
Yeah. Phil has wrapped.
Yeah.
Phil has wrapped something.
This is something for you.
Look at this Dr. No theme.
It's the best I could do.
It's
Everything
amazing.
Else was Christmas in the closet.
The this paper is, looks
Amanda,
like
yeah. my wife. This is from my favorite scene in Tomorrow Never Dies, which I think you guys didn't like that scene, but...
Can I...
Let me take you
can
back.
I guess as to what this is without even opening
I
it?
I think you'll know.
This feels like it might be a Brioni tie. No.
it is not a Brioni tie because in that scene, he was not wearing a Brioni tie.
It's a... Wait, who makes this tie? This is amazing.
It's on there on the cellophane.
Oh my God. Turnbull and Asser tie.
Oh, Turnbull and Asser. That's right.
Yes.
This will be... Jeez. I guarantee. Here's my personal guarantee. I will find a way to wear this on one of the after treks.
Yes.
Which scene is this from?
The Hamburg scene when he finds her dead and he has the scene with Vincent Schiavelli.
Oh, right.
He has the weird sexy moment.
Dr. Kaufman.
Oh, yeah.
And then he does the remote control car thing in the parking garage.
Wearing
that very sharp.
Oh, my God. So is this a vintage tie that you found or
do they still print it?
They do sometimes. You have to get on a wait list. This has been in my house for about 8 months. And once it's available, you got to kind of pounce on it. So that's what I did. I just thought it would, from your favorite Bond
film. This is just as someone who, wears suits and ties on a fairly regular
basis. That was the other reason.
This is a genius gift to get someone.
I didn't want to get you something you weren't going to wear, but I knew you do wear ties occasionally.
I'm gonna pull out the old Seamaster.
Yeah,
look over here.
Time.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy it. Wear it in good health, as they say.
This is an amazingly thoughtful gift.
Sure.
And the cut of this tie is so 1997.
It is a little 90s, but you know, everything's cyclical. The wide tie will come
also
back.
Like, the beauty of it is I sit at a desk.
Yeah, so. There you go. You button the jacket. It's fine.
Oh, this is just...
Look at...
Matt, what have you done lately? Oh, Phil just came in and gifted us with amazing things.
I'm just sitting here and looking pretty.
That's it.
Oh, this is... I love it. I love this. I love this. Thank you, Phil. This is very kind.
You're welcome.
To give me something from one of the greatest James Bond movies ever made.
I thought you might feel that way.
This is beautiful. This is just... This is a quality gift.
Right on.
Like, all
right.
Saying that,
I hope this
that.
Was fun to listen to.
This was amazing.
It was fun to be here.
Look for me with this tie on a computer screen near you.
Right on.
I rarely get to be on actual television.
Sorry, Matt Gourley, I interrupted you.
That's
you,
all right.
You wanted to talk about predictions about Bond 25.
Yeah, I say we each make one prediction and see how close we get.
All right, I'm happy to do that as I make a Foley artist's noise for someone being trapped in a cellophane factory. I honestly, here's my prediction is that the villain will have been a victim of sexual assault at some point.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I will predict it will be the most traditional Bond film Craig has ever done.
Wow.
And that in itself will be a revolutionary act.
Yeah. I predict the story will exist on its own, but they will wrap up something to do with Madeleine Swann at some point in the film. They'll take a moment to quickly deal with that so they can get on with something that exists as its own little piece.
Hmm.
And I also predict it will be directed by Danny Boyle and have a female villain and a protege woman.
I predict that the Aqua Terra makes a return appearance.
Mm. The Aqua Terra.
That's the blue watch that he's wearing with the silver Tom Ford
suit. Let's each make a prediction for the theme song artist.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, this is so hard this far out, but Cardi B.
No way. I'm going to say they get Adele back.
Florence and the Machine. More of a wishful thinking than a guess. But
she'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the move to go get Adele back would be interesting, but I
think it's actually better that they didn't do her back to back, because it's even more of a Shirley Bassey, like, keep going back to the well that works.
It's a return to greatness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do they go to Shirley Bassey?
Ooh. Could she pull it off?
More than anything, I want David Arnold back.
Yeah, me too.
And he's worked with Danny Boyle.
In what?
What's the Leo DiCaprio thing?
Oh, that's right. The island? Or the
beach.
The beach.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Who's his cinematographer?
I don't know that he has a one.
Yeah.
But if he does, I don't know who it is.
Yeah. Bring David Arnold back.
Please. Please and thank you.
And also, I would be not upset if we saw Joe Don Baker back.
All right. Take it easy. Before we go, I want to mention that at the last Pistol Shrimps game, a James Bonding fan walked up to me and handed me these. He has made something called Thunderball, the Matt Skuda cut, and it is 20 minutes shorter. So whether you believe in that kind of blasphemy or you're happy to have a little bit of respite from the long scenes.
Not in my house.
You can go to MattSkuta, SKUTA.com/cuts, or it's on Vimeo as well, and the password is Aquafan.
I might watch that.
I believe there's also, isn't there also a For Your Eyes Only with Barry music instead of the Bill Conti music out there?
Good grief. I don't know.
It's blasphemy, but that may be one I'd be curious to see. I think there might also be a GoldenEye with Barry music.
Nice.
All right, Phil, it's just a luxury to have you here.
Thanks for having me. Well, for letting me say Fangoria.com once or more times.
Of course.
You know,
right.
Just to get that out of there.
No, we got to talk about this very briefly. We know that if you listen, you'll be listening next week as well, and you're going to hear a lot about how Phil is now the editor-in-chief of the resurrected Fangoria into a premium quarterly magazine.
Yes, sir.
So just tell us a couple things. Maybe you can tell us something about it that they won't hear next week.
Oh, I can't remember what I said about that thing, but it's I've been a horror kid since I was a little fella, and this, like, I'm running the magazine that got me into film in the first place is a dream that I dared not dream for myself. So
yeah,
this is a very cool part of my life that I'm very excited about.
And wait till you hear more about it next week. I am so excited for this thing to come out. I will be a subscriber and can't wait.
Thank you, man.
October it is.
Yes, sir.
More like Shocktober.
Oh,
Fangoria's back. James Bonding
will return
with
Make a Choice. Make a Choice. Make a Choice. Live and let die.
See, Matt just stole that observation from me.
James Bonding Podcast. James Bonding Podcast. James Bonding Podcast. James Bonding Podcast. Matt and Matt and Matt. James Bonding Podcast.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the improv fantasy podcast Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. Eight nuts.
Rachel Bloom.
You want to see my collection of men corpses and one woman?
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins is crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos, ruler of the Eighth Circle.
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.